Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with co-host Christina Chambreau, doctor of veterinary medicine. Today is October 27th, 2011, and we're very, very fortunate to have a veterinarian homeopath guide us through typical pet problems. Today's topic is vaccinations, and that's going to follow up exactly with the program that we just had about Gardasil, and it's going to be a little bit different. I'm going to just give Christina some instructions here. If anybody wants to get onto the live chat, you need to go to the show page on Homeopathy World Community, click on to the specific show that we're going to be hosting at that hour, and then right under the show page itself and that session is a live chat. And you know what? I'm assuming that the live chat from the previous show is still on. Maybe somebody can let me know. It sounds looks like she's typing, so she's here with us.
So this is Christina Chambreau, and I just typed something on the chat, so it looks like it's there.
Okay, so that tells me that I don't need to turn my chat on and off each show. It just carries on from one to the next. And so we're very excited to have you here. I'm sure a lot of people would like to learn from you. We've previously had shows about the seven keys to the health of your pet. We talked about how to remove fleas from your animals. And last week we were talking about hypothyroidism in dogs specifically. So today we're going to discuss vaccines and homeopathy.
And we're actually going to just begin this discussion. What I'm going to do today is an overview, and then we'll go into more depth of these down the line, because all of these need to be talked about multiple times, just like you have for a long time have had the show on vaccines for people, because there's new and updated information that comes along.
And right, also and we also have many new listeners, so the new listeners need to get the baseline information to understand what we're talking about.
Absolutely, and anybody who's listening, maybe the two guests, if you want to type in, you know, who you are, what kind of animals you have, any specific questions you have, that would be wonderful, and you can do that now or at any time during the talk. I'm going to briefly cover three areas in the 30 minutes, and then we'll have time for questions if you have questions afterwards. So vaccines themselves, commercial regular vaccinations, are they needed? Are they effective, and can they cause harm? Then we're going to talk about homeopathic, quote, vaccinations that many people believe in using called nozodes. Are they needed? Are they effective, and can they cause harm? So those are clearly issues that you have to be asking yourself every time you're looking at doing anything with your animals. You want to ask those questions. Is it needed? Is a flea chemical on the neck needed today? Is a heartworm prevention needed today? Is a spay needed? Is a neutering needed, et cetera? So those are the things that we really need to train ourselves to ask these questions on every issue. And then we'll spend the last 10 minutes talking about homeopathic treatment of the chronic diseases that are caused by vaccines. Oops, I've already said vaccines cause harm, haven't I? Well, now you know the answer.
You let the cat out of the bag.
I did. The dog must have barked enough to chase the cat out. So in terms of conventional vaccinations, first off, the key important thing is to remember that every animal, like every person, is an individual. Their environment, their family, their history, all of that is an individual. So while there are some lines of Dobermans that Gene Dodds has researched who absolutely, if they're vaccinated, will die or develop very severe problems because that's in their specific genetic line, there are other dogs and cats who are vaccinated with all of these vaccines every year of their life, and even now that I have a much higher standard for health, they stay healthy because their vital force, from a homeopathic perspective, is not susceptible to either the illness triggered by the vaccine in the body with the antibodies, nor to the poisons that are in the vaccine, like thimerosal that we were talking about on the last hour. So first we're going to look for a moment at, are vaccines needed?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's
no,
a good question.
It really is a good question. And, you know, do people need to get measles, whooping cough, and chickenpox vaccines when they're children? Maybe, maybe not.
Depends on who you talk to.
But do they need to get it every year of their life? Absolutely not.
Oh, no. Okay.
There's, you know, people don't get that every year of their life, so there's certainly no reason for animals to get it. Currently, I really feel that most vaccines are not needed. And a few vaccines like parvo and distemper for dogs and panleukopenia for cats, and in some super endemic areas, leptospirosis, there may be a reason for giving those, but I really don't think so. I think it's better to not do the vaccines, have a holistic approach to your animal, be ready with your homeopathy, be ready with your homeopathic veterinarian, so that if your unvaccinated animal comes down with one of these diseases when they're young, when they're a puppy or a kitten, that then they can be treated. Now, having said that, I do at this point still feel that dogs and cats need an initial rabies vaccine. I recommend that people stay legal on their rabies vaccine as long as their animals are healthy, and there's a lot that can be done to prevent negative side effects. I'm open to changing my mind on this one, but one vaccine of rabies will last a lifetime, and I have seen cats that were stray cats who had not been vaccinated come down with rabies. And it's, so for me, I'm sort of saying stay with the rabies, at least the initial one, and it's easier if you stay legal if your animal's healthy.
But well, I have a question about
mm-hmm.
that.
Yep.
Because they say, like, for human vaccinations, that the vaccine does not provide the same amount of immunity, lifetime immunity. And you just said that one...
What do you mean, as it used to?
Well, you said that one initial rabies vaccine will last a lifetime. Am I
mm-hmm.
hearing you correctly?
Yep.
And I typically think that vaccines don't provide that lifetime immunity as well as natural immunities. So maybe you can clarify for me.
Okay. Well, it's just that when I speak with immunologists, they say it does.
Okay.
And the tests that we're doing, and, you know, Ronald Schultz of the University of Wisconsin College of Veterinary Medicine, who's been the leader in decreasing the number of vaccines that we give, gives his dogs and cats a distemper and a parvo, well, his dogs, a distemper and a parvo, maybe one or two of them when they're a puppy or kitten, and he does titers because that's what his business is. So he does titers all the time, and they're fine, and he never repeats that. So that lasts the life of the dog.
Okay.
Rabies, the University of Georgia Veterinary College, there was a immunologist, I don't remember his name, who was speaking after I spoke on holistic, and I went up and asked him about it. I said, if parvo and distemper give lifetime protection, doesn't rabies? And he said, well, of course it does. We're just not telling anybody.
But the typical town or the typical town or county, when you have your
you need
animals,
to do it every 3 years.
Every 3 years, okay.
Normally, you give the first one. It's repeated in a year, and then every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said this, everybody is a little different. So I'm leaning towards. I'm fine with people who don't want to do parvo and distemper and just expose their animals and get natural immunity. However, a good example of this is two excellent, wonderful homeopathic veterinarians about 10 years ago who both were making that recommendation, or, you know, they were open to doing different approaches, but they, with their own animals, that's what they were doing. One of them had a litter of puppies who came down with parvo, his own puppies, and one of the puppies died of parvo. He then changed his protocol, recommending one or two parvo vaccines and maybe one or two distemper. At the same time, another excellent, wonderful homeopathic veterinarian had a cat that she had adopted as a stray and not vaccinated for cat distemper, who got cat distemper at age 6 and, despite her excellent care, died. She did not change her recommendation. So it's really a personal choice. And the truth is, it's not a black or white. It is individual.
Right.
So first, we just have to know, are they needed? Some of them are needed. Some of them aren't needed. That's sort of the first thing to look at. And we'll go more into detail on that in future calls. And then how effective they are. Some vaccines are totally not effective, and they're out there selling them anyway. But again, the parvo, the distemper, the rabies, and the cat distemper are very effective vaccines. Spirochete bacterial vaccines, which is leptospirosis and Lyme vaccine, those are very, 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 very ineffective vaccines. So if you live in an endemic area like a colleague of mine does in Kauai, where they get lepto all the time, and he cannot cure it usually, even with antibiotics, he really struggles with this. So for him, he recommends lepto vaccine every 4 to 6 months, as long as the animals are healthy.
Did you say that was that effective for him?
If they're every 4 to 6 months, but once a year, it's worthless. And it has to be the species that's actually causing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's hundreds of different species of lepto, and most of them aren't in the vaccine.
I see.
So they're not. So most of the lepto vaccines are not effective. The most important thing to know is that vaccinations definitely cause harm. Even the conventional community, who has now, for the last 10 or 12 years, recommended every 3 year vaccinations for distemper, hepatitis, leptospirosis, the core vaccines, rather than annual vaccinations. So at the top level, veterinary colleges, American Veterinary Medical Association, American Animal Hospital Association, they are all recommending every 3 years, not every year. So make sure you aren't doing them every year, for sure. And they did this because they do see the harm in it, and they saw that there were some studies that showed that they were good for many years longer than 3 years. Now, as homeopaths, we really know that vaccines cause harm, because the way we take the history, we're looking at what caused that symptom, what happened just before the urinary tract problem started or the behavior problem started. So we know that the cause of the problem was the vaccine that had just been given. We have cases we're treating and they're responding and doing really well, and then they're vaccinated and they slip dramatically. So we absolutely know that vaccines can, not always will, but can cause a problem. Now, the healthier an animal is, the better able they are to tolerate a vaccination. And as I said before, some animals, even ones that aren't that healthy, just aren't susceptible to being injured by vaccines. It doesn't bother them. Just like I have friends who are allergic to gluten and other friends who aren't allergic to gluten. And I have friends that are chemically sensitive and other friends who aren't chemically sensitive. It's the same thing. Some animals are susceptible to vaccines. Some animals are not poisoned by them. So, but let's not take the chance. And there are things you can use like Reiki, flower essences, increased calcium right around when the vaccination is given that can help prevent the damage from vaccines. Well, that took more than 10 minutes.
Okay. Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Well, as I say, we're going to have more to talk about on all of these in the future. So now we're going to move on to homeopathic protection. Nozodes are homeopathic remedies that are made from diseased substances. There are many nozodes in homeopathy that have been well tested, and they're listed in the Materia Medica, and they all end with an inum. So it's, or most of them do, metarhinum, hydrophobinum, sorrhinum. All of these are homeopathic remedies made in the normal procedure that are made from diseased substances. Hydrophobinum, for instance, or otherwise called Lisin, is made from rabid dog saliva. Sorrhinum is made from the scabies vesicle and the skin that was affected by it. And these remedies in the homeopathic Materia Medicas have all been proved. They've all gone through the appropriate homeopathic testing procedure. So we know what they cause when given to a healthy individual. So therefore, if we give one of those to an animal and symptoms appear, we'll know if it's symptoms of the animal or symptoms from the remedy, which is a nozode kind of a remedy. Now, other people, however, other nozodes are made and have been made for every single animal disease out there. Parvovirus was made from the vomitous stool and blood of an animal diagnosed with parvo who had not been treated with anything. But approving's never been done on it. Approving's never been done on the nozode for Calici virus for cats or the Feluk nozode or the mastitis nozodes that are being used. They've never been tested, never been proved, so we do not know what they do.
So those are nozodes that you don't use?
Well, let's hang in there for a minute. That's just what they are and how they're made.
Okay.
Now, historically, when there's an epidemic, homeopathic remedies have prevented people from getting the epidemic, like a vaccination. Mm-hmm. But it's not that Hahnemann would recommend for every scarlet fever epidemic to use belladonna as a prophylactic.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the one school, the one boarding school he was at, he did the genus epidemicus and came up with that belladonna is what fits this episode of scarlet fever in this location with these girls. And by giving belladonna to everybody, he prevented any more of them from getting ill, as well as curing those who were ill, although he had to go on to other remedies maybe for some of them that were already ill. In the same way, so that makes sense, because what you're saying is this is a very strong disease that's pushing the vital force and creating a particular pattern of illness in the vital force, and it's so strong that most people are going to react the same way to it. So that makes sense for giving one remedy to a lot of people. However, what we do if we say we can give, so then we come up with the question with nozodes in animals. Let's pick parvo and dogs. So if you decided not to ever vaccinate your dog against parvo, but you're going to use nozodes instead, what potency do you give? How frequently are you going to give it? How long would you expect the result to happen? How effective would they be? And could they cause any harm? What happens if you give a remedy repeatedly to a healthy person? They develop symptoms of the remedy. Well, we don't know what the symptoms of the nozodes are. So animals given nozodes on a repeated basis might become ill, and we don't realize that we've caused it by the nozode.
Well, those are proving. You're talking about when you repeat a remedy
right.
again and again, you're going to be doing a proving, and therefore you're going to find mm-hmm. out some information.
If you have sensitive animals, but it's absolutely not ethical to do a proving on an animal.
Mm-hmm.
So
we only do provings on humans. Yes.
Because people can give reports. So here's the thing. So the question again is, well, what potency would you use, Deborah, if you were going to use a nozode to protect?
That's a very good question. It depends on...
How often would you give it?
Well, I would call my homeopath. Because when I speak to some homeopaths, they'll tell me to do a 10M or a CM or very high potency one time. And then other people will say, you know, to do it at like carcinosin at 200 C three times a day for a day. You know, it depends on mm-hmm. who your homeopath is.
So as much as I encourage people to think for themselves when they're working with conventional doctors and conventional veterinarians, I encourage people to think for themselves. And that's why Deborah Brock's show is so wonderful, because it's helping people get the information they need to think for themselves when the homeopath says to do something. So there's a very basic principle in homeopathy called like cures like. That means that the only time you should give a remedy, really, in homeopathy, is when you've listed all the symptoms of the person or animal you're giving the remedy to, because that's a reflection of the underlying vital force. And you find a remedy that matches those symptoms, right? Isn't that
right.
the basis of homeopathy? When else should you do a remedy? Never.
Right.
So therefore, you've got a remedy here called a parvo-nozode. It's never been tested. We don't know the symptoms it causes. And you're suggesting that we give this vibrational pattern to 100 dogs, and that it's going to match that vibrational pattern of all these 100 dogs that you've not taken the case on and don't know their symptoms, because they don't even have symptoms because they're puppies right now and don't have any symptoms yet. And that it's going to somehow interact with their vital force to prevent them from, in the future, week, month, year, we're not sure how long, preventing them from getting a disease. Homeopathy doesn't work that well, that way. That's not how homeopathy works. Dr. Ron Schultz actually did a study using a parvo-nozode. Now, I don't like these studies, but if they're going to be done, we might as well use the information from them. He was studying 3 or 4 different parvo vaccines, because most of the parvo vaccines 10 years ago were ineffective. And he proved that and reported it, but it wasn't until he stood and did a live talk on it that the vaccine companies fixed him. So he was testing several conventional vaccinations, and he tested the parvo-nozode using the protocol that Dr. Hamilton, Dr. Loops, and I came up with years ago. And so he had virgin puppies, never exposed. They all were treated in these different ways with a control group, and at the end, the parvo-nozode was no better than nothing.
Uh-oh.
Some of the vaccines worked, some of the vaccines didn't work. The parvo-nozode given ahead of time did not work.
Okay, so saying it's ineffective. And this is also, and it was not harmful either then. It had no...
Nope, not that we know of. You have to, you know, again, there has to be a sensitivity to the nozode, but I have heard of problems from giving nozodes. So number one, it doesn't make sense to give a nozode from homeopathic philosophy. Number two, we have a study showing it's ineffective. Now, the one time, and number three, is it can cause harm if given too frequently, or if the animal is super susceptible to it. It could trigger other, it's sort of like giving an illness. Giving a remedy is like giving a little illness. James Kent said, take a remedy once a year. Doesn't matter which one. Just reach in and take a remedy. Just jiggles your vital force a little bit. Sort of like getting a cold. Jiggles your vital force a little bit. I don't think he used the word jiggles. So how can we use nozodes? The one place where it makes some homeopathic philosophical sense, and in practice I've seen some results, is if you give a nozode after an animal's been exposed to a disease. So we have a litter of puppies, and the adults or a puppy or two have gone to a show that's full of parvo. They come home. One of the puppies or adults starts getting sick. Looks like maybe parvo. We treat that animal with the appropriate remedies, and we give a nozode to everybody else. And I have definitely seen, like, two get sick, and then we give the nozode, and no more get sick.
So it arrests the spread of the disease because you've taken the specific, the pets have already been exposed, you know that, and then some of them had been sensitive to that, and then they're all in the same family. And so it's not so much
that they're all in the same family. It's just that what we're saying, and it doesn't work all the time because of this, but if their vital force is exposed to parvo, we're making the assumption that all the vital forces are taking on, to some degree, the parvo vital force pattern, the parvo energetic pattern. And therefore, the nozode parvo energetic pattern is like cures like.
Right,
and so
Hahnemann's Organon would say be giving the artificial disease. No? I thought so.
I'm not sure. We'll bring that up at the next one.
Okay.
Write me an email on that one. I'd have to think about that one for a minute. So if you have puppies or kittens, some people will give a 30C once a week until they're 16 weeks old, with the premise that they're giving it and will have given it after they've been exposed soon enough to have them not get sick. That's probably okay. I don't really recommend it, but I'm not particularly against it.
And what remedy were you talking about? What disease?
Any.
I said
using a nozode. Some people do that. They'll give a distemper nozode and then a parvo nozode the next week and then a distemper nozode the next week. And the idea is they're trying to, in case they got accidentally exposed, give the nozode frequently enough that it'll shift the vital force back to health.
I see.
So it's okay as long as you don't count on it to be effective. It's got the potential to be effective, but I wouldn't count on it to be effective.
Okay. My only question would be, if you're doing that, are you then sensitizing that individual pet to when they do get in vicinity of the disease to be more sensitive to it? No.
Nope, okay. I don't think so. Good question. Very good question.
Okay.
So finally, what diseases do animals get if they're sensitive to vaccines? Any disease. Behavioral changes, neurological problems, immune system problems, and urinary tract problems are often the most common. But any ailment, ears, skin, fungus, Demodex, well, that's an autoimmune. Most of them are autoimmune anyway. So it basically can cause any problem. Therefore, the way to treat vaccinosis is to take the case, look for the characteristic symptoms, and for each symptom in the repertory, look to see if there's a subrubric, sneezing after vaccination, asthma, cough, asthmatic after vaccination. If not, and sometimes even if those rubrics are very tiny, go to generalities, vaccine, after, problems after vaccines. And so that's the way to treat.
Right.
They're ill and you think that it's because of a vaccine.
Okay, let's just refresh that again. Let's repeat that. So if you think that your pet has come down with some sort of symptoms and illness due to exposure to a disease.
No, to a vaccine.
To a vaccine. Then the way to search that in the repertory for the symptoms and potential homeopathic remedies would be to look at the generalities after vaccines and then...
No. You missed one piece. The first thing is you take the case and list the symptoms. for each symptom that the animal is showing, look that symptom up in the repertory the way you normally would, and then see if there's a subrubric after vaccination in that for that symptom. For instance, cough, asthma after vaccination. So some symptoms will have problems after inflammation. Other symptoms will not have problems after vaccination. So if you had an ear problem, you'd go ear inflammation inside, but it doesn't have after vaccination. On the other hand, if you went to cough, asthmatic, If you go to probably respiration asthmatic, but some of them will have
specifically listed
in cough. It's actually in the, it's not under a specific cough, but you go to cough, vaccination after, and you have a list of remedies. Now, if you look up a symptom like inflammation in the ear, you're going to write the remedies for inflammation in the ear, and then you go to generalities, vaccine after. And you would make sure that whatever remedy you choose has generalities after vaccination in it, unless you're in one of the smaller rubrics.
Right. And so we're not necessarily going to end up with a nosode in all of these cases. You may very well end up with just a generalized remedy that we know perhaps
99% of the time you will not have a nosode.
Right. So then you will end up with something like silica or stuia or something like that.
Calcarea, pulsatilla. The remedies after vaccination rubric, especially in the more modern repertories, is pretty large.
Okay, so that means that you do need to find a homeopath to discern which is the proper one for that individual animal.
And that brings us to the final point, which is there are a number of people who dabble in homeopathy who, for people or animals, say, well, I don't care. I'm just going to give the vaccine, and then I'm going to give a homeopathic remedy that will get rid of the bad effect of the vaccine. Once again, we're not thinking homeopathic philosophy like cures like. We're thinking traditional medicine, conventional medicine, where you give the same thing to everybody. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking you want to give something right after the vaccine, what would you give? Thuja? Because it got rid of the negative effects after smallpox vaccination in people? Or would you give Hypericum for injuries after puncture wounds? Or would you give Letum for bites of poisonous animals? Or would you give Apis for bites of poisonous animals? Or like that. You know, it's like, which remedy would you give? Well, none of them make sense.
Right.
Because none of them are like cures like. So I do not recommend ever giving remedies immediately after a vaccine unless you know the remedy needed by this animal and you know that vaccines weaken the vital force, thereby causing the individual symptoms to appear. And in that case, you don't have to wait for symptoms. Go ahead and give the remedy right after the vaccine or before, you know, right around the time of the vaccine. But that's rare. Most of the time, you just give the vaccine, use the Reiki, use the flower essence, use whatever general detoxing you can do, not homeopathic, and then if symptoms appear, find the correct remedy. And vaccination ailments after is, just to briefly list these so people hear them, aconite, antimonium tartaricum, apis, arnica, arsenicum, viridicarb, belladonna, bufo, calcarea, carcinosin, ceanonthus, crotalus horridus, cuprum, echinacea, graffitis, heparsulf, kali chlor, kali mur, viperum, malandrinum, mercury, miserium, phosphorus, serinum, rustox, sabina, sarsaparilla, sepia, silica, skookumchuk, stramonium, sulfur, thuja, tuberculinum, vaccinium, variolum, and Zincum, and then a few others.
From A to Z.
Yep, from A to Z.
Okay.
So in the future, we'll talk about these different issues, but it's the place to start.
Okay, so did we cover all the material for today?
We did.
Okay, and so I would just like to say
okay.
one word.
Okay, so there's a question from Bob,
okay,
which is, what if an animal lives inside? Why should it ever need a vaccine? If I put on my conventional hat, what I would say is that there are many illnesses, and this is true, that are transmitted, are aerosol transmission. And there are others that are transmitted by stool and others that are transmitted by urine. So unless the person never goes outside and the animal never goes outside, then the animal could easily be infected against many ailments by the person bringing it in. Now, most conventional veterinarians will be less likely to push vaccines on indoor cats. There are many conventional veterinarians who are even willing to see cats who are indoor cats without the legal rabies vaccine. However, what other conventional vets say is, oh, well, bats carry rabies, and bats could be in your house.
Oh, bats. Okay.
And so, the person could get it too, so let's vaccinate every person against rabies, right? So, if they're an indoor animal, they certainly are less likely, but they certainly could get exposure. Frankly, I worry a little more about indoor animals because they aren't building up that natural immunity. So I recommend that most indoor animals get some outdoor exposure.
Oh, thank you for that.
Now, that could mean, a chihuahua who pees on a puppy pad and lives indoors all the time. It could mean that puppy being carried outside and set down, and you play with a little toy and go to the park and have, when you're carrying this little chihuahua, you sit down on the ground with it and he runs around between your legs.
Mm-hmm.
And right. The point was about bats. Yep, bats can give us rabies, and we don't get vaccinated. So I totally agree that we shouldn't be doing that to our animals. Rabies is a weird one because everybody's really afraid of it. It's an appropriate name, hydrophobinum. That's fear of water, but the whole rabies thing is fear. Fear, fear, fear. The rabies vaccine causes fear. The rabies disease causes fear. Everybody's afraid of rabies.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a story recently I heard about a girl who recovered from rabies. She was bit and got rabies and recovered. Have you all talked about that on your show?
No, we haven't. So,
it was very recently covered, so you definitely want to check on that.
Okay, I'll see if I can search that one out. But I wanted to kind of close to say how I feel about homeopathy. Homeopathy and its practice, which you emphasized again and again on today's show, is, I say it's a verb. It's the action of the interaction between the medicine, the drug, the homeopathic remedies, and the individual and their response, not just a pill on the shelf. That might be called a homeopathic remedy, and it's not really homeopathic until it's actually in use correctly.
Yes. Unless it's the like cures like match. Absolutely.
Right. So people need to kind of put a new thinking cap on and understand the way, the philosophy and theory behind homeopathy. And that's really, really important because we do have to change the way we think about ourselves interacting with the environment and medications.
Yep, absolutely.
So next
week we're going to do, what should we do next week? I knew what I wanted to do and now I've forgotten.
Well, I can put it up on the post there and they can find out by visiting. And I want to tell people that they, if they're on the web page for the Blog Talk Radio Homeopathy World Community, there is a link there that says, I think it says something about fleas. And if you go to No More Fleas link, it will go to a page with information about a handout. It will have all the other information through all the shows that Dr. Christina has been disseminating to us. And so just click that link and don't forget to share the shows with your friends, your email lists, on Twitter, on Facebook, MySpace, wherever you are.
Absolutely.
So once again, thank you for a very thorough show on the topic of pets and vaccinations. And we're going to close out today. And please do send us your comments and questions.
Actually, what we're going to talk about next week is homeopathic philosophy and treating animals. How about that?
That sounds good. If that was your, that you just remembered to...
Well, just with what you just brought up, I think that's going to be a good one to cover.
Great.
Some basics.
Looking forward to it.
Great.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Bruck and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!